Here's the difference that Richard Feynman had noticed. Any experimental apparatus they have in the elementary particles physics is destined to destroy the particle by the fact of, by the act of measuring, and thus no intermediate measurements are possible. An intermediate measurement would destroy the particle before the consequent measurements. So any measurement prevents any other measurements in the future and in the past as well. So only a single act of measurement is possible in a life of a particle. And it creates the very famous Heisenberg uncertainty principle. You need two measurements to measure two characteristics, but you can measure only one of them, because there will be no second attempt. So all the intermediate states between the launch of, between the emission of a particle and the measurement of this particle, all the intermediate states of this particle, or all the points of its trajectory, are not knowable to us. Are not knowable to the physics of contemporary to Richard Feynman, and until today, but never mind. Since they are not knowable, there is no point in modeling them. And our smooth continuous differential equation models, they are specifically designed to predict all the intermediate points of trajectories. And we cannot predict them, because we shouldn't, because we cannot verify it. Our goal is to predict the state, a state, the state of a particle in a single given point. And Richard Feynman comes and says, okay, let's abandon our attempts at prediction of every point of trajectory, because this trajectory is scientifically insignificant for us. We cannot witness it in any way. Let's stop writing these humongous differential equations for things that we cannot see. And perhaps these things are not true, whatever you think you learn about them. So the approach of Richard Feynman is the approach of non-knowledge. He said, let us capture in some symbolic manner the fact that we don't know a lot of things. That let us write on the paper only the things that we know, and predict only the things that we can verify. And thus he compactified all this mathematical bullshit, because it was bullshit at the time, because they were modeling things they could not verify, so it is rightfully bullshit. Now he cut off all the bullshit and cut to the chase, cut to the measurement point, measurement event. And he said, let us write down possible dependencies between the known properties of the emission event and the known properties and knowable properties of the measurement event. And he made it. He created some absolutely bizarre language, this quantum mechanics, that extends probability theory into a little bit unthinkable writing, ascribing complex probabilities instead of real probabilities to certain events. And it turned out to be working quite well. So he already had material data, experimental data, and he tailored his language in such a way that it fits the already learned facts of the time. It happened to be very useful because it continued to feed our observations that were not accessible for Richard Feynman at the time of the creation of quantum mechanics. But nevertheless, it is just a mathematical language. From the start, Richard Feynman abandoned the idea to create an ontological theory. He said, "We don't know, and I will not make statements about things I don't know and I cannot know. Let us just describe what we see." And he described some dependencies in a language that from the start has no physical meaning. That's very important. That Richard Feynman never claimed that quantum mechanics has physical meaning. It is a mathematical language. It works because it accurately captures the bits of knowledge we have about particles, and it allows us to deal with our non-knowledge. It allows us to put our non-knowledge in a symbolic language and then later on formally, what's the term to get rid of something in arithmetics? In a very similar manner, we can reduce our non-knowledge and make it insignificant for the end result. And if we cannot, we can see it. So it works. It works for helping us to put our non-knowledge into symbolic form and to see if it is significant or not. If our non-knowledge is significant, we have a legitimate result. We don't know. It's a legitimate result, just like any other result. And if we can, using this language, get rid of our non-knowledge, make it insignificant, we can predict results accurately. Experimentations prove us right. But this is the language to deal with non-knowledge. And quantum probabilities, just like normal probabilities, are statements of non-knowledge. Statements of knowledge, if you like, but they describe not only the object, they describe the state of our knowledge about this object. It is not the statement of the object as it is, because in case of quantum mechanics, we don't even have an idea what does it mean, things as they are. We don't know what are things. But we know something, and we can write down this something in a form that also captures that we don't know a lot of other things, and everything that we don't know is captured inside a statement written in a language, in a quantum mechanic language. It's very important because a quantum mechanic writing is a writing about our knowledge. So the same logical impossibility applies here for probability manipulation. You can say probability manipulation, but you cannot manipulate it because it is not a physical object. You can manipulate physical objects, but probability is a statement of your knowledge. And quantum probability is as well a statement of your knowledge. Here's how I tried to demonstrate that this is the statement of your knowledge. I promised to write it for the Anatomically Correct Banana journal, but every evening I feel so tired that I cannot get my mathematics straight. Okay, I'll try to outline. It's audio, I cannot write. I'll try to outline the course of my intended proof, and I promise I will write it down and publish in the Anatomically Correct Banana. So imagine a very simple, seemingly simple problem from probability theory. You throw a coin, you know that this coin isn't fair. You know, unfair coin is a coin that doesn't land 50% of the time. Tails. You throw an unfair coin 10 times, and it landed tails 7 times from 10. The question is, what is the probability for this coin to land tails, and you continue throwing it? It is not an easy question. It is a question that pertains to our axiomatics. It's a question that pertains to our assumptions. Before you start throwing it, what was this probability? Okay, let's say you designed a method to calculate this probability. It is not impossible. It is possible because it is a very practical problem that is being solved every day multiple times by many people, because it's just a simplified version of quality assurance problem. You run a production line of automobiles, 40, and you pick random exemplars from the production line and you smash them to bits and analyze how they perform when being crashed. And you assume that the properties of these few random crashed automobiles reflect the general property of all automobiles that is being produced. You do not crash every single one of them. You crash like 0.1%. So you need to know how would automobiles from the same production line perform under these stress conditions. How would perform the automobiles that were not crashed? You know practically how perform automobiles that were crashed, but they are no longer usable, they are crashed. And from that, you make assumptions how would perform those of these automobiles that were not tested, were not destroyed, crashed in the process of testing. Similarly, you can run endurance tests. So you run every engine for several thousand hours, and from that you assume how would this engine run ever after. You haven't run every engine for the entirety of its life. You run it for a fraction of its lifetime, and you make assumptions how would this engine run for the rest of its lifetime. This is the same problem as with our coin. The coin setup is simpler to explain, simpler to talk about. But the practicality is quality assurance. So this is a very practical problem, though a little bit simplified. So imagine you found a method to calculate the probability of tails for this particular unfair coin. And then you throw it a couple more times. Let's say you throw it another 90 times. So it was 7 of 10 tails. You throw another 90 times, and it ended up 60 of 100. What would you like to apply the same method you just applied to this coin after 10 throws? If you reapply this very same method to this very same coin after 100 throws, launches, whatever, experiments, would it produce the same probability? No. No, somehow 90 more experiments with this very same coin adjusted your knowledge about the probability for this coin to land tails. The coin hasn't changed. But the probability for this very same coin to land tails changed. What does that mean? It means that the probability for this coin to land tails is not the property of this coin. I just showed you a perfectly valid, testable, practically being used setup that shows you that probability for something changes according to your knowledge. Your knowledge about this coin has changed, and it produced the change in the probability. But the coin hasn't changed. So the probability is the property of what? Coin or your knowledge? The probability is the property of your knowledge and not the property of the coin, because we didn't change the coin. It is the same coin, different probabilities. Do you see it? Do you? I did perfectly well without actually writing down the solution for this problem. And perhaps it is even better than it would be if I do write down a solution. Because if I write down a solution for this problem and then demonstrate how this solution changes the answer, changes this probability, you would blame this change to the imperfection of my solution, which would be a repetition of some Wikipedia solution anyway, because this problem is solved. It's not a problem I'm solving for you the first time. Although I like to solve problems first time, but this this one is ancient. So many predecessors. So you could blame, if I had written it down, you would blame the outcome to the imperfection of my solution. But since I left it open, so you can come up with your own solution to this problem, and I guarantee this solution will depend on the amount of experimental throws of this coin, because it is inevitable this solution must factor in all the experimentations you have. So it must depend on the amount of the experimentation. It just can't avoid it because this is the only input it has is the experimentations. So you can't create a method that is independent from these experimentations. So when we change the amount of experimentation, we change the answer, and we change the answer not changing the object. So it does not depend on the way you solve this problem as long as your solution has any practical meaning, as long as your solution takes into account the experimentations, it will demonstrate to you my point, and it will be your solution, so you couldn't blame my conclusion onto the imperfection of my solution, because it won't be my solution, it will be your solution. So, nice. It's nice. I can only hope you understood my logic. So from that corollary, your famous Richard, not Richard, what was his name? Lawrence. Your famous Lawrence Krauss is an absolute perfect asshole. Because his famous celebrity topic is teleportation, which is just a special case of probability manipulation. So whatever he speaks about quantum theory is just as bullshit as Deepak Chopra. So your Lawrence Krauss is Deepak Chopra, one for one, and we just proved it. And we proved it above physics, we proved it logically. So it is a mathematical, not even physical fact that Lawrence Krauss is an asshole, equal in all regards to Deepak Chopra. It is following from the logical impossibility of probability manipulation, which follows from the definition of probabilities themselves. We just demonstrated to you how the notion of probabilities actually play out. It wasn't clear from the formal definition of probabilities that probabilities speak about your knowledge and not about the physics around you. So we cleared it out. And I hope ever since, from this very moment, very many people will be recognized by you as assholes.